Dr. George Pinkerton, Reel 2. So you had your leave.
Yes.
And tearful farewells, was it?
Yeah, that's
yes,
right.
Yeah. And you were instructed to report where?
I think back at the old Great Eastern, or one of these funny old hotels in London. Uh-huh. And then I got on a train and took me up to, went up to Leeds, mm-hmm. to the REMC based effort in Leeds.
Yeah.
And we were there, I suppose, about 3 or 4 days, and then we got on another train and went up to Glasgow, mm-hmm. and got on a boat.
Right. So you went off from Glasgow docks.
Yes.
What was the scene like there? I mean, was there
fascinating, actually. Yeah, there were quite a lot of troop ships. And as we went down the Clyde, all the ship workers came out of their thing and banged their hammers and waved their thing. It was a triumphant sort of send-off. It was quite amusing. And then we trundled down into the Irish Sea and were at sea for about... I spent about 3 weeks before we got to Freetown.
Mm-hmm. So had you any idea as you set off from Glasgow, or, you know, as you went south, where you were going?
Well, we thought by that time that we were going probably to the Middle East.
Uh-huh.
There was about 140 draft of all doctors, all REMC personnel on the boat. There were, you know, it was a fairly big boat, about 25,000 tons, I suppose.
Right. Do you remember the name of it?
Near Hellas.
The?
Near Hellas.
Oh, right.
Well, we used to call it Nellie Wallace. it was an old Cunard liner which had been taken over by some Greek line just before the war.
Uh-huh.
Near Hellas.
What was life like on board? Was it, were you reasonably comfortable?
Yes, it was. A bit crowded because we spent most of our life doing lifeboat drills. And they fed us jolly well, I must say.
Yeah.
They quite remarkable. I mean, nobody had told them about the war.
So what was the atmosphere like? Was it quite jolly?
Yes, it was, really. It was quite jolly. I think we were three in our cabin. I couldn't remember. I remember one of them. He tried to teach me chess, which not a lot of success.
So, how did you fill your time on board? I mean,
well, reading, and we used to have classes, sort of map reading classes and things like that.
Mm.
Of course, we went into Freetown.
Ah.
We just put our nose into Freetown, which was, it's an enormous, great natural harbour, Freetown. And it was full of big ships.
Mm.
The odd battleship and carrier in there. And I think we never got ashore in Freetown, of course. And then after about 3 days refueling and so on in Freetown, we set off again.
Mm-hmm.
And headed south. We had, I think, did a big sort of detour out to sea to get away from submarines operating from round the Cape, and I will remember when it had an albatross came alongside. It was wonderful to watch this chap. He sat, hung alongside the boat for hundreds of miles.
Really?
And the other thing I remember too was the flying fish. I'd never seen them before.
Yeah.
Hundreds and thousands of them.
Did you have any alarms or about, you know...
No, we didn't. We heard the odd depth charge being dropped in the distance, but really no real alarm.
Mm. Were you in a convoy?
Yes.
Yeah.
We had a cruiser alongside, but I was so sorry for these poor blokes, because the way this thing rolled, oh, dear me. Because we were getting quite big seas and we got getting down to the roaring 40s.
Mm.
And then we... We came into Cape Town, and the whole boat leaned over like that as everybody rushed to the rails to see the Table Mountain. And then we anchored in Table in Cape Town. And then we went to a camp, a place called Simonstown, I think it was called.
Mm.
where we camped until we waited to see what was going to happen. And while we were there, about half this draft, the draft was called, anybody wants to know the things, called RXOKF, RXOKF draft. About half of draft RXOKF went off to, disappeared, and I think probably went off to the Far East and probably went straight in the bag.
Right.
I must say the inhabitants of Cape Town were jolly good to us. It was really rather funny because most of them got picked up by some of the local population and taken out. But we were out first evening. We went ashore. The thing we determined to do was go and buy a pineapple. Walking down the road, and there was a girl in Cuban uniform on the other side of the road, and she suddenly let out a yell and tore across the road and flung her arms around me. It was a nurse that we'd been in known quite well at Chase Farm, and so she was a nice girl, but so we went out together when the rare occasion one did go out for a few days down in Cape Town, and they were very, very good to us. They made us members of the local clubs and things like that. And I've been about 10 days in Cape Town, I suppose.
So they were quite golden days, really. Well, I mean, you were in a very new situation and
yes.
seeing wonderful new things. What
yes.
impression did you get of South Africa?
Well,
differentness.
I was absolutely appalled by apartheid.
Really?
You know, you one had heard about it, but you had no idea of what it involved. But otherwise, it's a lovely town, Cape Town.
Mm.
Yeah.
Still no clue as to actually where you were going. No,
not at all. As I say, a lot of the chaps had disappeared. And as I say, I think they went east. And the next thing we did was to go to go down to the harbour and get on board the New Amsterdam.
Uh-huh.
It was a beautiful ship, a big ship, 38,000 tons, I think. And very fast, so we sailed unescorted. The only thing was, from the days before, stabilizers, of course, and she would roll on. We had a flat seat all the way, but she rolled the whole time. And we then went up through the Red Sea and finished up at Suez, where we were picked up by the train or when we went. Anyway, we got either train or bus, we got to Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
And the RMC base depot in Cairo.
Right. So, quite an exotic location. Then what was the base depot like?
Well, it was rather nice. It had quite a nice swimming pool, I remember. it wasn't a bad spot at all, really. And Cairo itself was quite gay. It's a very odd thing, but there were an awful lot of people who had a jolly good war. A lot of these people had been out there for donkey's years, had no intention of being anywhere else.
Mm.
And there they stayed. Anyway, let's let that go by.
Yeah.
But the... then, of course, the sorting out came of where these miserable bodies who'd arrived from with white knees from everywhere were to go. And so we were then all sorted out and sent to various places. And the about, I suppose, three quarters of the draft went up the desert. A few of them went to the local hospitals and units actually in Cairo and around Cairo. And that left two of us, myself and a chap called Kovacic. And they then decided, what are we going to do with these two? And Kovacic was promoted to become a bimbashi, and was promoted and went up to serve with the Sudanese Defence Force, and he stayed there the rest of the war. I met him again after the war, and he'd had quite a nice life in Khartoum. Bimbashi Kovacic. I think they couldn't resist sending him because of the name. And I was posted, I was told that I would was wanted in Baghdad.
Do you know where Baghdad was?
Yes, I had a vague idea it was over there. And so I then got on a train which chuffed up across the Gaza Strip and chuffed up to Haifa. And I think I spent a night in Haifa, I'm not sure. But anyway, then next thing I got was on the Hejaz Railway, which is a little narrow gauge railway which was built to run from Haifa down to Mecca. Mm-hmm. Although the line that went down to Mecca was never completed. Well, it was completed, but Alan had blew it up. So we then went across this strange little train through the mountains and arrived in Damascus, where I got another little depot in Damascus, which I found a fascinating city, actually. I spent about a week in Damascus.
Right, you had a chance to look around then.
Oh, yes, I did, yes. Mm. We were just living in a big house, I think, in the outskirts of Damascus. And we were made honorary members of the French Officers Club, and so we did very well in Damascus.
What was the atmosphere like? Because, you know, October 1942, wasn't it?
As long as they knew you weren't French, they were quite pleased to see you. They did not like the French.
Really?
No, well, I mean, the French had colonised them and pushed them about for some years, and they didn't like them at all. I then had to wait for a bus to take me across the desert to Damascus, to Baghdad. Mm-hmm. Because no one as low as a second lieutenant could possibly take an aeroplane. So we had to take the bus. And if you're lucky, you got on one of the... There was a firm which had been started by two New Zealand brothers called Nairn, ran these Nairn buses, and they had... one of them was a very superior air conditioner, first time I'd ever struck air conditioning in a vehicle, air conditioned thing. But the other buses were very ordinary little rattly tattly buses. And of course, as luck had it, I went on one of the little rattly tattly buses, and which would be bounced across the desert in the dark overnight. I could see these little Jerbers sort of skipping away in the headlights. It was fascinating. And we got into Baghdad dead the next morning.
Was the bus crowded? Were there people on it as
no,
well?
No, they were military.
Right.
Okay. I don't remember it being particularly crowded, actually. It was just very uncomfortable. It was one of these little narrow, typical sort of funny little bus. Looked rather like the modern American school buses, actually.
Oh, yes.
We then arrived at the base depot in Baghdad.
Whereabouts was that in the city? Do you remember?
I don't remember. It was right in the middle of the city, because I know we could walk down the main street from there quite easily.
Mm. What was the atmosphere in the city like then?
I don't know whether it was any different from what it normally would have been.
Right. Were there a lot of British military about, or allies?
Quite a lot of military British about. There were, yes. Mm. I think there was I think it was Ninth Army. Um, headquarters in Baghdad, not sure. Anyway, I reported Baghdad and greeted with a sunset. Oh, we don't want you here. Whoever sent you? I said, I've come a long way anyway. Oh, we don't want you here. We'll see what we can do for you. So they then looked around and said, well, they can use a medical officer up in Persia. I said, yes, that'll do. I'll go anywhere you like. It's a place called Qum, they said. It's a place called Qum. It was such an holy place, they said. So I then got on a train which went down by Babylon and Ur down to Khorram Shahr, I think, and then got on a boat, a river paddle steamer at one stage, for about an hour, and went up to Ahwaz, which is a few miles up, and got on the train that eventually goes to Tehran. And we're getting a bit hungry by that time. I don't remember. We managed to get scrounge a bit of food here and there, but I never provided me any proper rations on that ship. Anyway, I didn't starve. And eventually we got up to Qum, which is a very holy place, one of the holy places of Islam. Which is supposed to be the birthplace of Fatima the Immaculate, who was, wasn't the daughter of the Prophet, but she was a very beautiful lady. And I got up at Qum and joined 141 Field Ambulance. And we lived in... my tent was... lived in, we were in tents up there. We had a little sort of... what we called it Qum Cottage Hospital, but it was a little sort of clearing station in a couple of big houses in Qum, and we lived in tents in a pomegranate orchard outside, it was very interesting. I enjoyed my time in Qum.
What did you see of the local people? Did you have any contact?
No, we didn't really.
No,
I didn't. We hardly saw anything of them. They used to watch with fascination the local authority's way of filling the water tanks. Because these houses have huge water tanks in the basement, and they're filled from a stream which runs by. And every Saturday, whenever it was, these chaps used to come round with shovels and shovel the earth out of the stream that goes into the tank into the other stream, so that the stream went into your water tank. When it was filled, they'd shovel it all back again and start in the next house. It's absolutely fascinating. The other fascinating thing was to watch them building houses there. They were building a house just behind the one where we were. They just, you know, dug the mud up. I don't know whether they mixed it with anything, but they just put it into brick shape, put it in the sun to harden, and then when it hardened, it didn't, no hods or anything, they just sling it up. Fascinating. Anyway, this little Qum Cottage Hospital, as we called it, it was fun. As I was one of the most newly qualified, and reckoned, perhaps I hadn't forgotten as much as most people, was given the charge of looking after malaria patients. And another friend of mine who been there a bit longer, he was given the dysentery and the VDs to look after, which I thought was a bit rough. But I found malaria absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's a very fascinating illness. Mm-hmm. And I used to spend my time in the evenings sitting over a microscope, you know, looking at blood smears. So I thoroughly enjoyed my stay at Qum Cottage Hospital.
So who were your patients?
Oh, military. They were all, we had an awful lot, there was an awful lot of malaria in the division because they had been in India, they'd been in Madagascar, and so they had an awful lot of malaria. And they, and we used to get the odd ration. They used to put the odd ration off the train, and we used to get the odd ration.
What precautions were they taking routinely against malaria at that time?
Well, you took Meprocrine, which was one of the first one anti-malarials. The only snag was it turned people bright yellow. Not everybody. It didn't turn me bright yellow, but some people went absolutely as yellow as anything.
And that the effect on the liver or something?
I don't know. It was just some general effect that it had. It probably was on the liver, I should think. Well, maybe the Meprocrine itself, because it was a yellow dye. I think probably the dye. And the other thing was, of course, one used to smear things on. You always had to take your tights off and put your trousers on daytime and wear a long-sleeved jacket or battle dress or something. Also, you had this stuff you smeared on. But somebody found later in Sicily that it worked better if you put it outside the... just stood it on the side of your slit trench so that the mosquitoes would come and sit on it. So we didn't use that one anymore. Anyway, that was 141 Field Ambulance.
What treatment could you offer people who arrived with you with malaria?
Oh, we would start them off on the routine treatment for malaria.
Which was
quinine, Meprocrine. It used to be three things. It started off with quinine, Meprocrine, and then something else. But we used to send them off, because as soon as they were sort of out of danger, there was an ambulance, a coach or two that went up to Tehran every day, and there were proper general hospitals up in Tehran.
Right. I mean, how bad were some of these malaria cases?
Oh, very bad.
Yeah.
Some were very bad. Some. I don't. We had the odd one that died.
Was that because it hadn't been treated earlier, or was it?
No. I think you know, if you get an MT malaria, it can be so fatal, even with the most modern drugs, and the ones we use weren't the most modern.
So you were saying you were looking at, you know, smears under microscopes and so on. I mean, were you? I understand there are different types of malaria. Were
yes,
you
there
able
are.
To sort of learn?
Yeah, you could. Yourself? You usually pick it up. Yes, yes. If you could see it at all. Yeah, it was very interesting. That was.
So you were at Cwm for till February 43 to till May.
Yes.
Right.
I suppose that would be about right. Wait a minute there. Have I got my years right? That was 42. Yes?
February 43. November 42. Yeah, sorry, November 42 you went to Cwm, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
That's right. First 141 Field Ambulance, and then in February 43, 1st Battalion Coyley.
Don't say that.
Right.
Okay. Tell me. It's either the KOYLI
right.
or the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry.
Right.
You must never say Coyley.
I thought it was something foreign.
Oh.
My ignorance. Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry. Right. So you were.
I soon found that out.
You did the same, perhaps, yeah. Okay. So you were then attached to the. King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry.
That's right.
As RMO.
As Regimental Medical Officer, yes.
Right. So a different role.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how was that different? What were your daily duties? Did you feel a sense of just a paternal sense to your battalion?
Bill's working again.
Oh, right, okay. So as Regimental Medical Officer, you were... your patients were your battalion. Did you
That's
get
right.
to know them very well? I mean, how did
oh, yes, yes. Mm. Well, because I was with them for every year, so I got to know them pretty well.
How long long had they been out in the Middle East?
They had been, they had had a very interesting war. They had started in France in 1939. One battalion had been to Norway. And then they come back, regrouped in Ireland, went out to go, the intention of going to the Middle East, and the intention of going to the Far East, cleaned up Madagascar on the way, then went on to India, went across India. It was that time the Japs looked as if they might be coming down through India, went across the, right across India, came back through India when the Japs obviously weren't going to go, but then the next thing was that the Germans were probably going to come down through the Caucasus. So that's why they went up to Qom.
Right.
So they'd had a very interesting, been an interesting war.
So they were...
They were regulars.
Yeah, right, they were regulars, and they were very well seasoned by the...
Oh, yes, yes, they were, yeah.
So what were they like as a... as a...
Oh, super crowd, super people.
You say that with great respect.
I do, I was very, 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 very fond of them. And they, at that time, they mostly were Yorkshiremen too.
Right.
Because later on, of course, they, a lot of the old ones went one way or another, but they were a super crowd.
Mm. How did you organise your day, your time, your clinics as
well,
regimental?
The regimental medical officer takes the first parade of the day. Mm. And I used to have to be on parade... take my parade at 7:30 each morning. Mm-hmm. When you have the sick parade, and when you have a sick parade, you will then have a... someone comes in to see you, and he has a little chitty, and on it you put on what he's, what's got to happen to him, either fit for duty or so on, whatever, FFI, all these various things. You put on the script and send him off again, and then the rest of the day you you have your breakfast, and then you go around and do things like inspecting latrines and things like that. If there are any sort of exercises going, you take part in those.
Right. So you had a sergeant, did you, working alongside?
Yes,
you?
I had a sergeant, regimental, head of a nice man he was.
Mm. What was his name?
His name was Henderson. Mm-hmm. And he had been a Duke of York's boy. Do you know the Duke of York School? Yeah. Well, the Duke of York School, it was just at the top of Dover Hill. I have a feeling it may even still be there. And it was a school that was designed to educate the children of deserving military people. You know, if you were a battered old... Sergeant Major or something, you get your son into the Duke of York School.
Right.
It was only, they gave him a hell of a good education.
Mm.
They taught him all sorts of practical things. Old Henderson was a wizard at darning socks, for example, and stitching things on. You know, he learnt all those things as a boy.
Yeah.
The Duke of York School was a great... it was Henderson, and then old Chapman was the name of my sergeant.
Mm.
And he was a nice man. He was a real Yorkshireman.
Mm.
With he used to smoke the most disgusting tobacco. I don't know what it was, but he used to. Oh dear, you never saw him without a pipe.
Mm.
And if everyone got in any sort of disgusting tobacco anywhere, we used to give it to old Chapman. And then my batman was a chap called Whedon, who I'm sure had been a poacher in Sibby Street. He was a delightful chap, Whedon was, but he was a real villain.
So, you, I suppose, for the first few days or weeks, you took quite a lot of guidance from these men.
Oh, yes, I did.
This was your first post, as an...
That's right, yes, it was, yes.
Did you find it difficult to sort of adjust to that?
I didn't know that I did, really. They were so good, and say the whole unit was so organised.
Mm.
The first time I ever realised why people go around blowing bugles.
Right.
It uses signalling. If you wanted, if the C company commander was wanted by the CO, someone with a bugle would blow the call, which would go C company commander. You know, and that's how it was done.
Quite efficient. Dr. George Pinkerton, end of reel 2.